Jules, did you do your driving lesson today? How was that?
It's going fine. So I'm in the process of moving out of my apartment, and apparently our subletters are still there right now. So dealing with that right now, trying to get people out of our apartment so we can clean it up and hand it off to the new tenants people, and get my deposit back. Otherwise, I do not get my $600 deposit back. Oh my God, leave this house now. I'm in a conversation with seven people right now in a
group chat.
Oh, God. The driving lesson went fine, though. I don't driving at night. It's just never going to be a thing that I like
Are
doing.
Are you learning how to drive so that you can get away from the seven people in the group chat?
I've gotten away with not having a driver's license in Los Angeles for this long, but I don't know. The jobs that I'm looking at, I need a car.
I don't have a driver's license. I learned how to drive, like, briefly in high school, and I was living in LA, and then never got my driver's license, got my permit, didn't get my driver's license, and then I've been in New York ever since, so I just haven't. And also, like, apparently it's, like, bisexual slash, like, queer woman culture to, like, not have a driver's license, so I guess that I just, like, have to not have a driver's license forever. Yeah, to really lean into that stereotype, apparently.
Yeah, you, like, got out. You got out at a very good time. You were like, I could learn how to drive, or I could just go to the only place in the U.S., really, where you don't need a car. I'm Nikki.
And I'm Jules.
And this is Tangential, a podcast about the internet and the things that we do on it. Every single week, Jules and I, and sometimes a guest, will go through our internet search histories, talk about the things that we found the most interesting, and then share that conversation with you. This week, it's not just Jules and I. We have a real guest that we didn't just kind of find because we were recording in their house, like with Noah. Ellie, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, what do you want to know about me? I guess, okay, I'm Ellie.
Hi.
I live in New York. I am a writer, a journalist, a content strategist, and a social media manager. Sometimes I write for, big places online like Teen Vogue or Bust Magazine, and others. And then when I'm not doing that, I am stress eating talkies in my bed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, or taking long walks through the park to try to be offline.
Good. The opposite of what this show is, but yeah, exact good.
I mean, I'm good at being online. Is it my favorite thing?
No.
You know, no. But
Twitter exists.
I'm good at it.
So it's a hard no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ellie and I know each other from when I was at Hofstra first year, which that was 5 years ago. Like
was
this
85
week.
Years ago.
Yeah, like this week was first week. It was 5 years ago.
No, it was 85 years ago.
Oh, you're right. 85 calendar years ago we met. Yeah, it's just been so wild because, like, Google has been surfacing all of the photos that I took from, like, the first couple of honors college trips, like, into the city, and it's just unrecognizable.
It's
like, all of the people, like, I have, like...
Yeah, your hair was much shorter.
Round child face. Just, it was truly wild. Jules, is it your turn to start this week?
Nope, it's yours.
Oh.
I went last
week. My turn. Imagine if we had that conversation before we recorded and I didn't forget.
Yep, that would have been great.
Imagine if. We're gonna mix up the format a little bit this week because there are three people. We're going to just kind of popcorn, go back and forth, and then that's how we're going to do it. So the first thing that I will talk about today is the video game heavy week for me. I was thinking a lot about Destiny 2 this week because next week... the expansion for that game, Destiny 2 Forsaken, comes out on Tuesday, and Destiny is a weird game. I'm pretty sure I talked about it on the show before, but in case you don't know, It's a first-person shooter that is, like, more skewed to a shared world experience. So, like, it's entirely online. The entire point of the game is that you play it with other people. And you go through this story, and you go through these missions, and you go through these quests with other people, and try to find new stuff and solve puzzles and that kind of stuff. But it is very explicitly not a game that is... it is not a game that you kind of drop into, do everything by yourself, and then leave. Like, the whole point is to find people to play the game with and kind of share that world and share that experience. But this is the second game. That's why it's called Destiny 2. And they have somehow managed to destroy everyone's understanding of how money works in the game. So after during year one of Destiny 1, they released this thing, this expansion called The Taken King, which basically fixed Destiny 1 and made it like a complete and competent video game. And they are doing the same thing this year, except they're destroying the pricing model. So you pay $60 for this video game, right? Because that's how much capitalism has decided that video games are worth. And yeah. Then, which is just truly wild. And then for Destiny 1, you paid another $40 and you got everything that was released during year one. So that was like two DLCs and then downloadable content, like pieces of downloadable content. And then you got The Taken King and you got Destiny 1. So if you hadn't played Destiny 1 before, you got all of those things.
I've never played a video. That's not true. I've played video games, but very rarely. A large majority of the video games I played have been with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you and Jules would get along extremely well on that front. Because
just because we don't touch video games, yeah. Only like because
I wish I could like video games.
I do too.
I physically can't. I have motion sickness and throw up if I look at the screen for too long.
Oh my gosh, that's not me, but I have I don't want to say the opposite of motion sickness, but I get just very stressed and depressed and physically ill if I sit for long periods.
That's Nikki with movies.
That's me with movies, yeah. yeah, yesterday Jules got like 50% of the way through World 1-1 in Super Mario Brothers. Next time we go to 1-Up, you're beating that fucking level. I'm convinced.
Not likely.
We're gonna get there. We're gonna get there.
Yeah, I used to play like Mario Kart and stuff sometimes in like 8th grade or like GarageBand, but I don't really consider GarageBand like a video game.
GarageBand is a professional audio program that we definitely aren't using to record this show right now.
No, not GarageBand. That's not
Guitar Hero.
Guitar Hero. Same thing.
Or Rock Band the other one. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Man, I miss Guitar
Hero. GarageBand. Love to play GarageBand.
People should have bought Guitar Hero Live. Not just because I've worked on that one, but because it was a good game. Bummer. Anyway.
I'm sorry. It's personally my fault.
Yeah,
because
you should have bought Guitar Hero Live for the Xbox 360, PS3, Xbox One, or PS4.
Should have bought one of those gaming systems in the first place.
Anyway, Bungie, the people who make Destiny, have decided to just confuse everyone, and now you have three options to purchase this video game. Your first option is to spend $40 and you just get Forsaken, which is like the main expansion. You need to own Destiny 2 already in order to play it, so you spend $40, you get just that. Or, if you haven't purchase the DLC from over the course of last year, they released two tiny expansion packs. You can spend $60 and get both of those expansion packs and Forsaken, which is like a savings of $20 for $60.
Nikki, I just need to pause you for a second. Are you aware that like every time you speak about like any product, you just like sound like an advertisement?
Yeah. That's the goal. My goal is to just be a mouthpiece for Bungie. Yeah. Listen, if Bungie wants to swoop in and tell me that they'll give me, I don't know, however much, any amount of money, really, to talk about Destiny, I'll take it. I don't care. And then the reason I'm kind of pissed about it is that in order to get everything, which is the DLC or like the expansion pack, the DLC and the season pass that Bungie has decided to make, it costs $100 American, which is just, that is just too much money. That is just such a wild thing to approach. And like, I was trying to do the research to figure out which one I needed to buy, and I got confused, and I rarely get confused about video game things, but I couldn't like suss it out, and it took me very long. So what I'm just trying to say is, no one buy anything Destiny 2 related. Everyone just go out and buy Donut County, a good video game that you only have to spend $15
Donut County?
Uh-huh. Oh, man.
Why is it called that?
Okay, so Donut County, this is a very, very quickly. Donut County is a video game made by this dude named Ben Esposito, who he's worked on a lot of games, but he most recently was part of a group of people who were making games called Arcane Kids, and they were basically like making joke games. So they made this Bubsy 3D game. They made a video game called Sonic Dreams Collection. You can look up those things. They'll be in the link dump. They're super weird, super cool. But Ben made this game called Donut County, and the entire plot of the game is you are a hole. It's like based in the city of Los Angeles. You're a hole, and the entire object of the game is to have that hole eat things to get bigger.
Oh my god.
And then you need to just get the hole bigger to get more things into the hole. That's the whole game. And then
Feel like this would be a really exciting game that would like make me want to play video games, but I would play it for like a day and then I would be like, this is really pointless. I'm just gonna like go eat things in real life.
Luckily, it's only 2 hours long, so get in, get out. Donut County, it's cool. Everyone should go look it up. It's on PS4, it's on iPhone. And it's like on iOS, and then it's on PC and PS4, all that cool stuff. Yeah, that's my video game corner for this week. Who's next?
I think it's Ellie's turn.
Oh my god, this is so much pressure. Do I just like, I'm just like scrolling vehemently through my history. Oh my gosh, so much pressure. Okay, well, yesterday, I just have a bunch of searches for, like, literally every Carly Simon song ever and every Carly Rae Jepsen song ever.
Yes, the two Carlys.
Yes, the Carlys, right? Like, because I was procrastinating starting writing an article that I need to have finished this week. And as one does when one is supposed to be writing an article, I decided to paint my nails and then scroll through Twitter. And as I was doing that, I was like, I don't know. I think I like someone I follow like recently changed their like display name to something about Carly Rae Jepsen. And I just like scrolled through and scrolled past one of their tweets. And I was like, oh my God, Carly Rae Jepsen. And then I started thinking about how much I love Carly Simon, because I've had a bunch of Carly Simon songs stuck in my head. The sadder ones, because I've been going through it a bit lately. And so then I just had this genius idea, and I was like, oh my god, what if I made a Spotify playlist, and it was literally just Carly Simon and Carly Rae Jepsen songs. Carly Rae Simon, basically. And it would be the ultimate Carly playlist. And so I made that playlist yesterday. And so all of my search history from 4 to 5 p.m. yesterday is basically every Carly Rae Jepsen and every Carly Simon song ever. I did make the playlist. It is on my Spotify now. And it is called Carly Maybe... Definitely.
That's extremely good.
I'm aware. So, you know, thank you. Unfortunately, I did not get paid to spend all that time
searching
through every Carly song ever.
All you need to do
ever.
Is get better at Spotify, and then a random man from Tennessee will offer you $500 American for a playlist that you made 3 years ago. It's really
easy. I'm getting paid to write the article that I'm procrastinating on, but I don't think it's really going to cover the amount.
Can you?
Of time
do you think you can expense that time
the Carlys
and be like it was additional research that I needed to do?
Research.
Yeah.
It was really important. Really important research.
So I don't know very much about Carly Simon, which is to say,
all I know about her is "You're So Vain."
That's
the
That's the only song.
Oh my god.
Like, while you were talking about it, I like started to Google and I was like, oh, I think I kind of know this one. Know a lot about Carly Rae Jepsen. So.
Carly, I know way more about Carly Simon. I know very little about Carly Rae Jepsen, except that she is a queen. Mm-hmm. She has great music, mm-hmm. just really fun pop music. She's, like, in her 30s, but yeah. she looks like my age. Like, she looks like she's, like, 23, yeah. 24, 25. And she's, like, she has a sword.
Yeah, she has a sword.
And, like, she's great at wielding a sword. And we should give her
more swords.
The power. So, but I know if you want to know about Carly Simon, I can talk about Carly Simon.
Give us the 3 minute, what should everyone know about Carly Simon? If we're looking to get into Carly Simon, where should we start?
I'm going to start out by saying that she is like an iconic, I guess she was like a really famous singer in the 60s and 70s. I mean, she's always been famous, but that's when she like really was a thing. One of her most famous songs is, like you both said, You're So Vain, which has some of the most, I'm just going to keep using the word iconic, like just the most iconic lyrics. And that song is about her ex, Warren Beatty. Incredible song, just basically a real good slow burn. If you're ever dating someone who's a jerk, really great song to listen to.
I wonder if Annette Bening ever plays that song when she's really annoyed with Warren.
Oh my god. And then another one of her exes is, I believe their ex, yeah, it's her ex-husband was James Taylor. So they did some duets. They did some real good music stuff. Another good thing to know about Carly Simon is that her dad was Richard Simon, was the co-founder of Simon & Schuster.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And her mom was both a singer and a civil rights activist.
Wow, just so much talent in that family.
It was really an incredible family. Her grandma, I love, like, her family history. I love her. She's such an interesting person. Her grandma was raised by nuns in England until she was 16.
I guess it didn't stick. The teachings of the nunnery didn't stick because Carly exists.
she was a Bronx girl from New York City.
BX.
Yeah.
I'm doing the arm thing, but no one can see it because it's an audio medium.
Yeah, and probably the biggest song of her career was You're So Vain. But it makes me really upset when that's the only thing that people know from her, because she just has so many good songs. I don't know if either of you have ever seen or anyone who's listening to this has seen the movie Working Girl. Really great 80s classic. Anyone? No?
Yeah. Yeah, I've talked about it on the show. Oh, great, Nikki. I've talked about it
on the
show.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Nikki, for shame.
Haven't seen it.
Okay, you need to... I've made your plans for you tonight. That's what you're doing.
Do I have homework? Damn.
Yeah, you gotta watch it. It's really amazing. It's with Melanie Griffith and Harrison Ford and... Why?
Alec Baldwin is what this internet page says.
Nikki, there's a whole Bob's Burgers episode about Working
Girl.
Oh,
my God. Is there?
I'm sure you've watched it.
Huh.
Well, okay. Right. So, Working Girl.
Now I have homework.
Iconic. Incredible. I gotta wean myself off the word iconic. But just, like, I'm talking about Carly Simon. So, like, it's warranted. But incredible movie. And Carly Simon did the, like, big hit song off a soundtrack for that movie called Let the River Run. And it's just, like, this amazing, beautiful, cool song that plays while showing Melanie Griffith on her commute on the, like, New York ferry in the city.
And then Carly Rae Jepsen is just, again, making the best pop music right now. And if you're not listening to her, you're making a broad mistake. Jules, it's your turn.
Speaking of Jules. So I have a couple corrections from last week.
Whoa.
Number one, MoviePass is not going to give me all of the money they promised.
Oh, my God.
They're going to give me a prorated amount.
I've also been screwed over by MoviePass, so you don't feel alone.
Yeah. So I feel like I've talked about MoviePass every single week since I've gotten it, either in either glorifying it or damning it. So I guess for the last 5 weeks, I've been damning it consistently. Mm-hmm. But MoviePass announced last week that they were going to give annual subscribers their money back. And I was super hyped for that because I still had a solid 6 months left of the pass. So I was like, sweet, I'm going to get my $80 back because I was promised a service and I'm no longer receiving it. Because MoviePass is now only allowing its annual subscribers to follow their current package model, which is 3 movies a month, and it's limited to the selection of movies that you can see and where you can see them, as well as when you can see them.
So yeah, that's why I quit MoviePass.
It's the complete opposite of what the service was before.
Yeah.
So the issue with my account was that the card that I used to open my account with has expired, so I had to put a new card in before they tried to refund that account. However, they wouldn't let me into my account because I killed my subscription. So I had to call MoviePass and get this all sorted. And after I changed my card for a day, I heard nothing from them. And then I get an email from MoviePass saying, "We haven't heard back from you. Have you changed your credit card information? You're going to be charged, or you're going to lose the prorated amount for this month." So it would be even less than the $24 that they said that they would refund me, the prorated amount instead of the $80. So now it would be $18.
Wow.
And I was like, seriously, you I hate you so much. I don't understand why you can't just give me my money and pay attention to your why is their system from their website different from or their support system from their app different from their support system on their website and also different from their support system
on Twitter
via email. It makes sense whatsoever. So I'm mad at them and have been trying to figure out how do I get my money back from the various boards on the website. No one has an answer. Hopefully I'll get my money back within the next week, even though it's only $24. But something is better than nothing, I suppose. The second thing that I had to correct myself on was, so last week I started the show talking about sharp objects, and mm-hmm. I said that the woman who wrote Girl on a Train also wrote Sharp Objects. That's incorrect. Gillian Flynn only wrote Dark Places and Sharp Objects. Girl on a Train was written by Paula Hawkins.
Oh. Well, mm-hmm.
And also Gillian Flynn wrote Gone Girl, and that's what I was talking about. The movie mm-hmm. with Ben Affleck. Yeah, so that's what I had to correct. Not that anyone got it, I don't think. because they're comparable in tone, I think. Gone Girl
and Girl and MoviePass. Sure.
Have you seen either?
Oh.
Have you seen either, Nikki? No, it's not your kind of movie, huh?
Well, the part of Gone Girl, spoilers for the film and book Gone Girl, the only part of Gone Girl I've seen is when she opens up Neil Patrick Harris's neck. That's pretty fun.
I guess I can move on to my first point.
Yay.
I recently started Golden Girls just because I felt like I should watch it.
Oh my God, did you also watch To All the Boys I've Loved Before?
No, I haven't. Oh wait, is that the one with the letters?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that Netflix movie. Why? Was there a reference? I didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they watch it. When
like,
they,
that's their, like,
the sisters
thing
watch
that they
it.
Watch Golden Girls.
Oh, my God. That was such a subconscious thing that
yeah,
I did.
Yeah, subliminal.
Wow. I hate that. Got. Okay.
They just put product placements for the Golden Girls and Subway all over that movie. And now you're watching Golden Girls and eating Subway and you don't even realize it's because of Netflix.
I hate that so much. That movie was trash, too. Oh, my God. Okay. Well, I looked up what the actual age of the Golden Girls were because it was really confusing because at times they said, or Dorothy would say, "I'm 55," and I was like, what? I thought the Golden Girls were supposed to be in their 70s. I don't understand what's happening right now. So I guess the deal was women just dressed and did their makeup in a way that made them look older than they were during that time. Because Rose, Betty White's character, is 55. Dorothy is Bea Arthur's character. She's 55. And Blanche, we don't know her age, but we guess she's in her 50s as well. Honestly, the hairstyles that they have, the clothing that they wear, everything about the way that they conduct conversations and the topics that they talk about suggests that they're in their 60s to 70s. But they're in their 50s, and we don't think that's old now. That's our parents' age. Like, I wouldn't consider my mom to be part of that golden girl kind of era where they're... Well, there's a lot of... I think that golden girls wouldn't work now unless everyone was in their 60s or 70s, a la, like, Frank and Gracie, or Gracie and Frank, the Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda show. I think that's the new kind of
Golden Girls that's one of my favorite shows.
It's really good, and it's written very well because it shows respect to... It gives women who are older a platform. That's not something that really happens in a lot of Hollywood movies or television shows today because we tend to neglect our elders and just act like we don't care about them. But a show like... is it Gracie and... It's Frank and Grace. Gracie and Frankie. I think a show like that shows respect to women of that age and shows that they can be interesting people and have storylines that can interest people that are in their 20s and isn't patronizing in any kind of way. I feel like Golden Girls can be totally patronizing at points, even though there are a lot of redeeming qualities to it. You have these women in their 50s who have extremely active sex lives and dating lives and aren't acting like they're off the market in any kind of way. They try to be active participants in their community and have things that they stand up for. And they all have careers that they enjoy. So there's lots of positives in that way. But it's the way that they, I don't know, especially with Bea Arthur. And I think that this is part of the reason that she didn't want to do the reboot of Golden Girls. Just, like, the way that they treat her physically. They're constantly making fun of her height and her physical appearance. And the writing is so that she's lesser than the other girls. And it gets kind of annoying, and it was kind of grating on me. But there's some really good jokes in there, and it's an enjoyable cast to watch. They just have a lot of chemistry. But, yeah, that's what I looked up about Golden Girls, what their actual age was. So they're all in their mid-50s.
So it's, like, the Sex and the City of, like, way back when? But, like, not.
Yeah, and I think that in the way that Sex and the City changed the narrative for 30-something-year-old women and their kind of appeal, Golden Girls kind of... But Sex and the City is more of a It's not a drama. It's still a comedy, but there's more of a seriousness to it. With Golden Girls, I feel like... I don't know. It's a sitcom format, so you're not as invested with the narrative. With Sex and the City, there's an ongoing narrative that you're really interested in, and you really, you care about the girls in Golden Girls, but it's a different level of care with Sex and the City. I recently watched that the week before, so I'm just, like, super into these stories about white women living their lives, I guess, recently.
I have never watched Golden Girls or Sex and the City, so I've seen, like, one episode of each.
You guys want to learn about lymph node biopsies?
Yeah.
So I had a friend who had to, like, she went to an ENT and was, like, getting her lymph nodes checked out because her neck was swollen. And then she was like, I think something's wrong with my lymph nodes. And then I was like, do they have to, like, take those out? So then I decided to do some research. And there are three types of lymph node biopsy. That I wrote down and I need to find. I found it. All right. So there are three kinds. Get ready because they're all extremely bad. There's one called fine needle aspiration, which is where it's basically like giving blood, except instead of sucking out blood, they suck out the juice that your lymph nodes kind of just hang out in. A core needle biopsy is basically where they put a hole punch in your neck, and then instead of taking out only fluid, they pull out tissue as well. And then the last one, they just cut open your neck and just kind of, like, get their fingers in there and, like, kind of pull your lymph nodes out.
So have you just been, like, researching this all week?
Yeah.
Lovely.
And I watched a video of it happening, which was a mistake, because there's a lot of blood. It's real gross in there. But lymph nodes I was, like, kind of expecting at the end of the surgery for it to, like, for them to pull out, like, a thing the size of a bean. But, like, the lymph nodes aren't actually physical things. They're, like, kind of suspended. Like, it's, like, a suspended gelatinous kind of, like, fluid stuff. And then your that's like where your body starts to fight infection, if that's what lymph nodes do. But yeah, that was I got deep on WebMD and related websites learning how lymph node biopsies worked. All of them can be done under local anesthetic.
I don't know what to say to that either. It's my turn?
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Well, like, the next thing that I can think to talk about, because this was such a, like, large portion of my search engine history this week, is the Nixon Cuomo debate. So this is going to be a fun rabbit hole. A little background. I am a writer and reporter. I do all kinds of different content and social media things online, mainly I report on things relating to like health and wellness and politics and culture and like the intersections of all of those things. And I am personally just very intrigued by politics. And as Nikki knows, I used to work in politics. Don't anymore. And I saw that the Nixon Cuomo debate was going to be happening on the campus of my alma mater and Nikki's half alma mater.
Yeah, I was there for a year.
Yeah.
I basically graduated from there. That's how that works.
I saw that the debate was happening at Hofstra a few weeks ago and, like, saw an article about it, immediately texted a mentor of mine, essentially, a mentor and a friend who is the, like, media relations person for the college. She's a great person. Her name is Melissa Connolly. Great person. And I made a joke about how I was gonna like crash the debate and go. And she was like, well, why don't you just, you know, you should come, I'll get you a press pass, like, why don't you just report on it? And I was like, wow, I can do that, you know, right? Like, sometimes I forget who I am and what I do and what my life is.
Oh, I do the journalism. That's what I do.
Right. I was like, yeah, people pay me money to cover, like, you know, local and national politics sometime. Yeah, I could do that. So I pitched my editor and I was like, hey, like, I have like an inside connection to this thing. I could probably get in pretty easily. Like, I would love to write something on this and attend it and do it live. Like, can I do that? And she was like, yeah, like, please. Yes, do that. That would be awesome. And I was like, oh, whoa. Okay, cool. So, I basically from like Tuesday to when, like basically from Tuesday at like 6 o'clock in the morning to Thursday at 8:30 in the morning, all of my search history is literally just like stuff about, Andrew Cuomo and Cynthia Nixon, some real interesting stuff, So I started writing the article on Tuesday just to put in some, like, background stuff so that I wasn't writing everything Wednesday night and Thursday morning, and so that it could get out in a timely fashion. And basically, like, my whole search history is just, decriminalizing marijuana, unqualified lesbian, Cuomo family dynasty, like all this stuff. And basically just like I went down this rabbit hole of like the entire history of the Cuomo family. So that was interesting. Basically all Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, my search history was just like taken over by Cuomo and Cynthia Nixon. So pretty much you could ask me mostly anything and I would, that's not true. I'm not going to go that far, but you could ask me a lot of things and I would know a lot of things. Actually, something interesting that I found out that I didn't know before, and I'm not sure how I didn't know this, because I feel like I know a lot about, Cynthia Nixon. I know a lot about Cuomo too, but I feel like I had known like a lot about Cynthia Nixon because I've been following her campaign really closely and, what I found out when I was interviewing her chief spokeswoman for her campaign on Wednesday night after the debate is that apparently she has like a transgender child, which is one of the reasons that she is so like passionate and pushing for, you know, really making transgender rights and gender laws and stuff a priority. And I didn't know that.
Yeah, her kid just graduated.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I mean, I knew she had kids, and I think I read a piece by her in, like, The New Yorker or something a few weeks ago where she talks about her family. But, yeah, she's a queer woman, and she has a transgender child, and she's married to a woman. I just think that's, I don't know, she's very cool, and she just, I think that, like, the way that, her personal life and, like, her politics and, like, how, like, the actions that she takes, in politics informed by her personal life are just, I really like that. Like, I really like when you see people who, because you don't always, like, sometimes, you know, you have stuff in your, I don't know how to explain this, I guess, like, sometimes you have stuff in your personal life that, like, it personally affects you, but you don't, like, go to bat for that thing in your life, and it's just really cool to me that, like, her personal life and her professional, like, political life crosses over so much, and she really goes to bat for the things that mean a lot to her in her personal life.
Yeah, I was talking about her on the show, I think a couple weeks ago when I got into the Sex and the City hole. She really just puts her money where her mouth is, and I think the example that I gave, she was talking specifically about the subway in New York and how Cuomo has never ridden the subway a day in his life, and she rides it every day to get to work.
Yeah, one of my favorite things on Twitter is, like, people post their selfies with her, like, when they see her on the subway. She is on the subway every day.
She knows what she's talking about, and she genuinely cares.
Celebrities, yeah. They're just like us.
Yeah.
Celebrities, just like us.
I mean, okay, you know what? I wouldn't go that far. This is something that I read in her. I can't remember where it was. I think that it was in The New Yorker, but she wrote this, like, piece where she, like, it was, like, an interview, like, a written interview, like, Q&A, but, like, she answered the question of, like, what her morning routine is, and she talked about how she and her wife eat raw oats in the morning, and my editor from Teen Vogue, okay, yeah, like, so, I posted this, like, on Twitter a few weeks ago whenever I read it, and I was like, okay, I love you, Cynthia, but, like, what are you talking about? Who eats raw oats for breakfast? Like, what is this, like, travesty? What? And my...
Just cook the oats.
And my editor from Teen Vogue actually replied to me, and she was like, Ellie, like, I'm pretty sure that she means, she just means, like, overnight oats. Like, those are raw oats. But, like, I don't...
Right.
I don't know. I don't consider those raw oats. I mean, I guess because they're technically not cooked, but, like, I'm just really concerned... That
no, yeah,
for
I
her
like
digestion.
She eats
I like
raw
to think
oats.
That Cynthia and her wife have an industrial bag from Costco of oats,
and then they
go into the kitchen in the morning, grab a cup, and then just put the cup in the bag, go back to bed, and then just eat the dry
I'm
oats
just
like a horse.
Really concerned about that. So, like, you know, celebrities are not just like us always. Cynthia Nixon eats raw oats, raw oats, and. I want answers about that.
I just want answers. Jules, do you have any oats? Is your next thing oats related?
It's not.
Damn.
Remember the movie I talked about last night? It's the opposite
of
oats.
Oh, yeah. Teeth okay, so is super duper not about oats.
Oh, my God.
So there is a movie, a cult classic, if you will, called Teeth that came out in 2008.
I was just talking about this last weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a Mitchell Lichtenstein movie. Well, I guess I'll go into it. I'm glad that you know about it. I'll just give listeners a brief summary of the movie. The movie starts with this man and this woman who get married, and they each the woman has a daughter and the man has a son. And from the very beginning, the son's very upset about having a new mother and also having a new sister, and he is in the pool with his... This is the origin story. It's important to go into direct detail about this from the very beginning. The man's... the little boy and the little girl are in the pool, and he essentially... Okay, this is kind of graphic. Let me just set the tone for this movie. This movie, this movie discusses serious things involving sexual assault, but it's also a B-horror film. So that means it takes things to the extreme, can be extremely gruesome, but in a way that is kind of reclaiming a woman's voice in these extremely vulnerable moments. So in the beginning specifically, the little boy essentially assaults his stepsister, and he puts his finger in her vagina, and it's bitten open. And we're like, what the hell just happened? And we don't know how his finger got that way. But from that moment on, the kid is kind of infatuated with his little sister. And then fast forward years later, the little girl has become a 17-year-old girl and is the head of her abstinence club at college, or not at college, in high school. And her brother is this awful punk kid who treats women awfully. And the movie just progresses in her trying to preserve her purity and men trying to assault her. And with each assault, her vagina bites off their dick because her vagina has teeth in it. And it's called Vagina Dentata.
I love it so much. And that's the movie. I think about this movie every day of my life. I'm not kidding.
So the movie ends essentially with her killing her stepbrother. We don't know if he's dead. We assume he bleeds out via her having sex with him. It ends with her hitchhiking and her... I don't know what her deal is. I think... So there's a critical point of the movie where she's doing research on her condition, and she finds out that there has to be a hero that gets rid of the teeth in her vagina. I guess that means that she has to have sex consensually with a man and enjoy it. However, I thought it was going to end with her masturbating and the teeth going away, but that was not the case. It ends with her in the car of a man, an old man who has picked her up and who has locked the doors. So assuming that the next step of this movie would be that the old man would try to rape her in some fashion. And then the actress breaks the fourth wall and looks into the camera, and that's how it ends. But I honestly think it would have been better with my ending, but that's just my thought. But yeah, it's a wild movie. I just looked up the general consensus on the movie.
Wait, so were you, like, researching, like, Vagina Dentata?
The general consensus. No, I didn't dare. I just wanted to see what critics thought about it and if they actually appreciated it as much as I did. And they did. It is like 80% on Rotten Tomatoes, and for a B-horror film, I think that's a very good score.
What a fun... And that what was a my fun...
Nikki, good. How you feeling?
Super good. Yesterday...
I briefed him last night when we were at the bar, so...
It's just a lot. It's just a lot.
So in the movie, I think the coroner who is examining a penis with teeth stuck in it says that the tooth is from a lamprey and a shark.
Cool.
A crossbreed, but still has human DNA in it.
Dino DNA.
Somehow, the teeth go away when she is having sex with... At one point in the movie, she's having sex with the man and is enjoying it, and the teeth aren't coming out.
Well,
so they're retractable.
I think that it's just... Like, it's just for, like, men who are predatory and, like,
yeah,
she doesn't want to
yeah.
have sex with, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because that quickly changes when he calls up his buddy while they're having sex and saying, oh, I'm having sex with the kid, with the girl, the president of the abstinence club. And, yeah, then her vagina.
I would love that. I think that would be super useful. And I would love to have that.
Just think it'd be so much cooler.
Although I can't,
it's chock full of
say
metaphors.
That
it's a great,
I'm
it's
gonna
a great
have sex with any men anytime soon. So.
Just in case you have the teeth ready yeah. to go.
That's interesting. I'm really really interested in like, I mean, there's just so much shitty like shady tech coming out of like Silicon Valley and all these like bro spaces in the world that like I am really interested in seeing maybe like the ways that tech can be used for good for things like sexual assault or like women's reproductive health or like I don't know. I did like a lot of reports on this in college because I'm super interested in that. So I would love to see what might come out in terms of like products and tech and stuff in the next few years.
Alternatively, we can teach people to be good people and we wouldn't need that.
Wow, you know what?
Are you saying that the problem is starting with people and shouldn't be solved by spending millions of dollars on...
I mean,
perhaps.
Like, the thing is that like at the end of the day, people are shitty and make problems in the world and like tech can't really solve it because like tech is made by people and people are flawed. So... You know, it's just, like, a fun world to live
in. Yeah, just love it. And no problems literally at all.
Specifically right now.
Never been a better time to be alive.
Greatest time.
I mean...
Well, which, no, that's true.
I have ancestors who, like, died.
Yes and no.
Yeah. It's true. There are many worse times. Many worse times.
There are a few points in history that are, you know, probably, like, every point in history was not ideal for, like, some population.
Well, bad. You want to talk more about tech? iPhones. You remember them? Remember those iPhones?
I'm staring at one right now.
Anyway, well, I have enormous news for you. They're going to put out another one this year.
No.
Yeah, they're going to put three of them out this year.
I don't like that.
So Apple put out the invites for their event. It's happening on the 12th. And no one really cares about this, but it's extremely interesting to me. Apple is in a weird spot right now because they have too much stuff to announce, which doesn't happen that often, but it happens every 3 or 4 years. Apple like gets to a spot where they haven't touched a handful of things in a very long time, so they have to have two events month like in back to back. So this is going to be the phone event is what everybody's thinking, and the next month or in October. It is September, y'all. That's gross. In October.
It is pumpkin spice season officially, and let me just say I'm getting a pumpkin spice coffee today. I'm very
excited. Still like 95 degrees here. Like so.
Yeah, it's too hot. It's too hot
oh
for
my God, are
mental
you
yeah,
it's hot. Whoa, it is it's like a really nice fall day, basically, here in New York.
What's that? I don't know what that is.
What's fall?
September is like September is the bad month for LA summer. Like September is like secretly the worst month because it is just hot and your brain is like, it's September, it shouldn't be like this.
In LA.
Yeah.
Or like everywhere.
No, in LA. Because like your brain is like, it is September.
Please tell
it shouldn't...
me like what to wear next week because I'm
gonna it's
going to
be like
110
degrees, like straight up.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's going to be hot out there.
Holy crap.
Yeah, sorry. Anyway, Apple's in a weird spot. They have too much stuff to release. They're going to have two events. This one that's coming up in September is going to be the iPhone, the phone one. They're releasing three phones. So there's going to be the cheap one, quote unquote cheap. That is going to be like the direct successor to the 8. And then there's not, which people
I don't even know what I have right now. I think I have the 7 or the 8. I don't know.
They did this thing where they like made the 6 and they were like, this is it. And then they just made that one three times, which like, I don't blame them for. Cause like the 6 was a very good phone, but like, and then there's going to be the new, the successor to the iPhone 10 is called the 10S, except it is stylized as XS, so it's literally called the iPhone XS, which is pretty good considering the phone's gonna cost $1,000 American.
I really don't know what I'm gonna do about my next phone because I need a phone like probably in the next like year, and I don't know what to do.
I think you can just get an 8 because like I think what they're going to do, and this is what they usually do, they just knock down last year's to budget price, and then again, quote, budget, and then they have the low end, and then the medium, and then the high one. But then they're making a plus version of the 10, which I don't understand why you would want a phone
just, like,
larger than the 10.
What is even the point?
Yeah, like that, the 10 I think is the perfect screen size, and I don't know why you would want a phone that's bigger than that. Like, people who have like iPhone, like any of the Plus models, that makes no sense to me because the ratios on that thing are terrible, and it feels like it is bad to hold and use. But that's...
Yeah, like, iPhones are just kind of continually, like, getting worse, but, like, they're not stopping. Yeah. Like, they're not going to stop making them. We're going to be, like, on their, you know, it's going to be, like, a Simpsons episode or an episode that has a parody of, like, what the future's like, and it's yeah. just going to be, like, 2030, and we're going to have the 400th iPhone, and it's just going to be a mess. Like, at what point do we stop innovating on iPhones and, like, make sure... Okay, sorry. I'm not going to go on a rant about capitalism right now, but, you know, that's, like, what...
But why? No, I agree. Like, I just don't...
Like, at what point do we just, like, stop...
Yeah, when we're like, this is like, fine?
Like, at what point are we just like, hey, we should spend time and money and power in the world, like, just making sure everyone has, like, basic food and housing and clean water and stop making new iPhones? No,
but then Apple... But then they wouldn't have $1 billion. You see, so right. it's good. I guess, it's wow. cool to good have point. $1 billion yeah. is the thing.
You're right.
That's You're why. Right. And that's why. I don't know. It's just, it's wild. I just, even from like a, just being in the, like having a brain that's kind of in industry, like I just don't understand why they keep numbering these things and why they just don't call it yeah. the iPhone and then just be done with it. Like this one, this right. is the iPhone that came out in 2018.
Mean, I think part of it being coming from like a, like messaging and communications background is that if you think about it, I mean, you're also kind of from yeah. that background, but like from my perspective, like if you think about it, it's kind of like if you keep labeling it and keep being like, oh, this is the iPhone, blah, 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 this is the iPhone, blah, blah, blah. It's like it creates this like internal cognitive like.
Yeah, you feel bad when you have the 7 and then they're on the right. 9th iPhone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like I don't know how to explain it, but it's just like. You know, you feel, like, cool for having the newest iPhone as opposed to, like, no one wants to say, like, yeah, I got the iPhone that came out in, you know, 2018. Yeah. Like, I have the iPhone 10 or I have the iPhone XX or whatever. And they, I think, I really do. I think that's intentional. I think they do that for a reason. I think the people at Apple are smart and they want to keep driving that bullshit, so.
Yeah, that was my last thing. I'm going to entertain the idea of buying an iPhone like I have done for the last 5 years, and then we're going to see if I actually end up getting one. So,
yeah, I'm going to come to you when I need to do new phone things because yep. I don't know what
it's the only thing I'm good at.
Yeah, like anytime that I need to know about tech stuff, I will literally just like message mm-hmm. you and be like, hey, I still need to buy a camera, speaking of.
Yeah, but we'll get there. I need to update that document. That document's super out of date.
I don't know when I'm ever going to have money to buy a camera, but, you know, at some point. It's going to have to happen.
Who's up next? I've forgotten the order.
Ellie.
How are we not? It's me, but, like, how are we not done yet? Like, this is incredible. I don't know.
Listen, that's what the show is.
It really is a tangent. I'm, like, I'm scrolling. I think I'm going to take something from the top of my memory just because I remember something that I was searching for, I think it was, like, last Saturday because I remember that I was, like, looking at it right before we were supposed to do the podcast mm-hmm. last week. And I just remember I was reading – are y'all, like, book fans?
I am. I was an English major.
Do you read? Okay. What We Lose by Zinzi Clemens. I had been wanting to read for like a really long time and I finally found it at the library and checked it out. And I was reading it last Saturday morning and I can't remember what it was. I finished the book this week. I can't remember what it was in the beginning of the book. The like main character was talking about like just looking up like the like wives of serial killers and like who their like wives were and who their girlfriends were and like who their children were. And it just like lit a spark in my brain. And I remembered how like interested and fascinated I am by that. Like, I think I've always been very like fascinated by, Like, the people who are related to and who are in, like, close quarters of, like, bad people who do really shitty things. Because it's, like, if you're a person, you have people in your life and, you know, people have you in their lives. And it's kind of, like, you can't always know who, like, a person in your life is. And so I'm always super fascinated by, like, the stories of and the backgrounds of, like, the wives of serial killers or, like, just the friends of, like, people who did shitty, horrible things. So I was, like, just Googling all this stuff.
So what did you learn about Ted Cruz's weekend? Wife?
I didn't. No, I was looking at all of these, like, really niche people, and I'm still scrolling through my freaking internet history to find this from, like, last Saturday. Oh my god, I didn't even catch that. Yeah, I literally thought you said burn. Ted Bundy.
No, yeah, it's a slow burn. It's a slow burn.
Oh my god. Wow, I cannot be held accountable for that. I, like, blacked out and didn't even comprehend what you said. Oh man, but speaking of Ted Cruz, I have read a lot of articles in the last week on Beto O'Rourke. And I don't know his name makes me think of fish.
Like a betta fish. Everybody go vote
betta
for
fish,
him.
Yeah.
If you live in Texas. Yeah. We don't have any listeners in Texas.
I have read a lot of articles about, like, him versus Ted Cruz lately, because they're, like, every article that comes out about it is, like, the same.
Yeah.
Like, literally every article is, like, he's great and he's really good, but he's probably not going to win because Texas is not ready for him, and then also Ted Cruz is bad, but he's probably going to win.
It's weird.
I love that.
I think everyone, and by everyone I mean the left, and by the left I mean the left, not Democrats, is hype because of,
I mean, Beto O'Rourke is apparently hot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't really looked at photos of him because
cool.
I generally, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, he's like the hot, cool, like, yeah.
And I think everybody's hype on AOC. And I think that the expectation is that we can roll that success across the country over the span of the course of three months.
I do kind of think it is true. I mean, Andrew Gillum won this past week in – where is he from? We are kind of rolling – in success, but, like, I do think, like, I don't think that can happen everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like, he won the nominee for Florida governor, and he's, like, super progressive, and he ran on, like, a Medicare for All and, like, Abolish ICE and blah, 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 like, similar platform to, like, Cynthia Nixon and, like, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I think that it is good to, like, roll with that momentum, but I also, like, think that it is important to keep in mind that, like, some of it might be slower, and, like, some places we just might not win yet, because, like, that shit takes...
It takes time.
A lot of time. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez won for... quite a few reasons, but one of them was that she worked her ass off. She worked really hard. She had a great campaign team. I helped to campaign for her, and she had a lot of people who were really passionate, you know, gunning for her and working with her and working for her. She had, like, huge backing from NYC DSA and all these, like, NYC Democratic Socialists of America, like, working for her, trying to get her campaign out there. And also the other thing is that Joe Crowley, who was, you know, the person who's been in New York forever, but, like, he doesn't even live in New York, but he's just been around forever, is, like, a very what do you call it? Like, a party Democrat.
Yeah.
He's like a, yeah. Like, he's just been around forever. And That's not the right phrase, but I just can't think right now. But, like, he really underestimated her. And he didn't, you know, he did the same things that he always does in any, you know, campaign. Because I think he just thought he was going to win. And in some places, you know, Republicans and fellow, you know, Democrats or people on the left are not undermining or second-guessing, you know, the really progressive candidates as much. And so there is more of a competition in places like Texas. But then there's also, you know, just the fact that it's Texas. And it has a history.
I love our new fun politics show that we have now. It's really cool.
You know what, Nikki? I don't know why you thought that you could bring me on and, like, less than half of the stuff that I talk about would be politics. It's like, cool, you know me.
I think we have to recategorize this episode and put it in politics instead of personal journals this week on iTunes just so we can get there right.
I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase, the personal is political. I don't know if you have ever heard of that. It is the rallying slogan of second wave feminism.
That's me yelling and making a noise. Jules, you have anything? What's your last thing?
My last bit is an article that was written in the New York Times in February. I actually might have brought up this article in February, but I think it's relevant now again. And it was entitled, "Why Do We Still Watch Football? Discuss."
Why do we
still watch football? Oh my god, I can't answer that question. I've never, like, I've watched football, like, once.
Mm-hmm. I am... Wait, what did you glean from this article?
Yeah.
It's unethical in the sense that men are killing each other because of the helmets mm-hmm. and concussions.
Black men are killing mm-hmm. each other.
Yeah.
It's... Their stance on politics and bad. Just, like, yeah. the wish-washy manner.
Yeah,
in which
the NFL is, like, really horrible, right?
Yeah.
Specifically concerning the anthem and just any kind of... Like, yeah. Wasn't there a whole thing about athletes wearing pink on their cleats for breast cancer awareness and yeah. the NFL wasn't down with it? Just, like, how...
The NFL also has, like, a huge, like... domestic violence issue, right? I mean, I think that's sports in general.
Violence
but, like,
in general. Violence, domestic violence, murder, yeah. child abuse.
Ugh.
They got it all.
So bad.
They yeah. got it all. Yeah.
I don't watch football. I don't understand it, but also, like, don't want to support, like, that shit.
It's a bad sport. It is America's pastime, though, and we have to favorite pastime, and I think it's an interesting thing
Wait,
to talk
so what
about.
Is I really want to read this article now because
yeah I'll send a link. The I guess the article primarily focuses on the fact that we're allowing men to hurt each other in the way that and benefit from it in the form of entertainment in the way that the Romans did with the gladiators, and I think that's an apt comparison in some ways.
Yeah.
In that the gladiators were oftentimes enslaved and didn't get any kind of monetary compensation. There is monetary compensation, but what's the risk if you're going to have brain damage for the rest of your life and make awful decisions right. in repercussion to having the brain damage? Also, just the NFL's claim to be... I don't know, just aloof of the politics that happen around it, and yet...
Do they claim that?
Yeah, they try to remain indifferent on every political platform and every issue that comes up. They just want to be a place... They're very much of the school of thought that football is football, and that's it. That's all that they want to be. Sports. Mm. That's what you're here for. That's what you get yeah. paid to do. You're here for nothing else. And I think it just...
Wow,
promotes this mindless
true.
Watching of I mean violence in some ways, but also
well, like I also think that's interesting because like I feel like that is like outside of like lefty Twitter or like lefty Tumblr or like the corners of the internet where you know, like, people are quote-unquote woke or whatever. Like, I think that really is the understanding of a lot of things and how people think of a lot of things, like, that they're separate from politics, which is why people get so angry when you try to make things, like, quote-unquote make things political, because I think a lot of people really do, like, have that belief that, like, things are not inherently political and that they can be separated.
They like things being separated and things being uncomplicated, and I understand wanting to turn off your mind in that way, but when you have hundreds and hundreds of men that are signing up to be part of this sport when they're very young, like 12 years old, they start playing football or younger, and purposefully damaging their brains in the hopes of ending up in this place where they can be recognized by all of America and their athleticism can be viewed by hundreds of thousands of people, and that's the end goal. But what's the point if you're just going to be hurting yourself and you have no voice whatsoever as an athlete? You're just in the NFL. You're not allowed to be anything more than an athlete.
And I think that's just, that is because of, that is, you only get that way because of the demographic that the NFL serves and the NFL's unwillingness to do anything to try to educate that demographic on the fact that society has progressed from 1965. Right? Like, there's no impetus for them to do that because they make billions and billions of dollars every year. So, like, there's no reason for them to do that. But, like, you don't.
There would have to be, like, some really, really big cultural shift.
Right. Which, like, you're not going to get. Like, the NFL is going to die before it shifts.
Right.
And like, people are going to just stop letting their kids.
Dying at any time soon.
No, but I think people are going to, like, stop letting their kids play. And then the thing what's going to happen is that the skill base. So, okay, Kennedy,
I don't think people will stop letting their kids play. I think that people like having their kid be the star of the football team, and they like that glory.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it will die.
Because, like, what would, right, like, what would take over for football?
Basketball.
You know?
Like, honestly, football would be 100% less dangerous if the helmets weren't involved. That's what causes the concussions. If the helmets were leather like they used to be, there wouldn't be as many accidents, brain accidents. But that's like a separate matter. So I think we have two problems. We have the actual safety of the game, and then we also have the NFL as a league and how they're conducted and who were they conducted by, and just,
well, and then you have a third issue. I mean, there are many issues, but then you have the next issue is that, like, these people get paid insane amounts of money, and there is literally rampant poverty in, like, our country and in the world, and then, like, teachers, you know, are not getting paid salaries enough to, like, live.
Right, but I think you could also say football players and any athlete is the equivalent of an actor or an entertainer of some sort. It's what we put money into and what we value.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other issue is who we allow to play the game and if their personal life should be judged as well on the football field. I think it's similar to saying, should we watch Woody Allen or Roman Polanski movies knowing that they are rapists? Are we to separate the artist from the art?
I mean, a lot of people do.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
So are we to separate the person from the sport or the athlete from the person?
One of the core tenets of second wave feminism is that the personal...
Nikki,
I'm gonna stop you right there. We're done with the show.
Is that the personal is political and that it's impossible to
this
separate?
This episode of Tangential, in which Nikki explains feminism to me.
I think everyone should go watch The Shop, which is LeBron's new show that came out on HBO.
Wait,
this week.
LeBron
James, the basketball man. The LeBron James.
I can never remember
from the Vine.
Sports people's last names. I know sports people by
He's the one who started the school last month.
You've read about that.
I know who LeBron is. I couldn't remember what his last name was.
Oh, yeah, James. He's from the Vine. He has a television program called The Shop on HBO where he just sits in a barbershop with friends, and then they chat for like 30 minutes Well, I mean, they are in the they're shooting all day, and then they cut the conversation down to 30 minutes.
Right.
And it's really good. I actually don't think the first episode is free anywhere, but like if you want to watch it, I have an HBO login, so like just email me and I'll give it to you. But like it's
watch Nikki, just like any person
anybody just email the show. Listen, if this is how we build out our subscriber base and people start listening by offering a single free
listen
HBO
to my podcast, I will let you log into my HBO account.
It's super good. He has a bunch of people from all over the place. Vince Staples is there. He's got Jon Stewart, Jared Carmichael, Draymond Green, Odell Beckham Jr., like a bunch of athletes and culturally, and Candace Parker, a bunch of like athletes and culturally relevant people. And Snoop Dogg is there. Like, they're just talking about, like, kind of what it is like to exist in this moment. And the only white person that is on the show, or at least in this first episode, of is Jon Stewart. And the story is that Jon Stewart was only supposed to be there for a little bit, because the way that works is, like, LeBron and his partner Maverick were there all day, but everyone else was supposed to cycle in and out. So they had, like, people blocked off for certain amounts of time. And they were going to come in, talk, and then leave and, like, go do the rest of their day. And Jon Stewart was only supposed to be there for the first block, but he kept talking to people and then ended up being there all day. So, like, the conversations go really weird places because, like, Jon Stewart as the established middle-aged white man, like, talking to all of these younger black people who have been historically oppressed and basically had to fight their way up to prominence. Like, those conversations are super cool.
Yeah.
So everyone should go give that a watch. And I think it does a lot. It is like, it is the exact same conversation that we're having right now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because go ahead.
But like kind of like echoing like a larger conversation.
Yeah, definitely. It's a good half hour. And also LeBron James is fucking funny.
Circling back to the, NFL debate, I think that you can totally be a fan of football and the sport, but I don't see how you could be a fan of the NFL.
It's just that you can't consume it without. I mean, your other option is to be a fan. Right. Your other option is to be a fan of the NCAA. Like, no, fuck them. So, mm-hmm. like, you're, like, sure, but you also can't consume the sport without consuming the NFL. Like, I think
you can play the sport, you can enjoy it in that capacity, but I don't. Like, you can't stand for a league that you can do whatever you want, but I think be aware of the institutions that you're supporting while consuming sports.
But, like, I mean, I don't know. I wish that I were wrong about this, but I don't feel like I am. What I've gotten from those people is that, like, they don't care.
Yeah, people super don't care. Is upsetting. But like, which is not a bad thing. Like, it is impossible to expect.
It's exhausting to
exactly.
care.
Exactly. It's impossible
hard
to expect people who, not to, like, boil these people's lives down, but, like, the image, right, is it's hard to expect people who work 9 to 5 every single day, come home, have kids, do all that stuff, to also then be thinking about the social implications of the thing that they like to do for 3 hours on Sunday.
Well, like, you know, it comes back to capitalism.
Yeah, it's almost like it's bad.
Oh, Nikki, I don't know.
Theoretically, it's amazing. Theoretically.
No, yeah, it's great in theory. I mean, listen. Listen, it's Labor Day weekend. The labor unions were able to get all of us one day. out of the year.
I'm working Monday.
See?
Speak for yourself. I'm working
Doesn't
Monday.
Even really work. Capitalism's bad. yeah. Everyone should just go play soccer, is my hot take.
Or, the in people's England, sport. Football.
Yeah. The people's sport. Soccer. Football.
I played soccer when I was little. I ended up getting hit with a ball. Mm-hmm. In my vagina
Bad.
So much that I had to stop.
Yeah, that'll do it. That seems like a pretty solid reason to not do the thing anymore.
Yeah, I wish I was a soccer player. I don't do any sports. My sport is being online 24/7.
Yeah, I don't think we have a segment today. I think we've decided to make Josh's segment a monthly thing. But if you want a segment named after you, or you kind of just want to chat to any of the people on this show, you can get into contact with us in so many ways. You can get into contact with me via Twitter, at Godzilla. You can get into contact with Jules on Twitter, a service she doesn't use very wisely, at JS Clement. You can get into contact with Ellie, at Litter Ellie. Is that what it is? L-I-T-E-R?
It's, yeah, it's like literally, yeah. But like Litter Ellie.
It's extremely good.
I've had it for 10 years. It's never going away. It's the best thing I've ever
done. It's a very good handle. You can get into contact with the show on Twitter at tangential_, and then you can email us at tangentialpod@gmail.com. You can get a segment named after you. You can ask questions about any of the things we talked about today, recommend stuff, tell us what's in your internet search history, do any of that cool stuff. We will be sure to talk about it because we've only gotten one email. You can find the show on, yeah, just tell your friends. Hey, Ellie, tell your friends to email us.
I will when I post this podcast to Twitter.
Beautiful. Great. You can find the show on anywhere you can find podcasts. That's iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Casts.
No way.
Yeah, everybody, everywhere. If you think of it, it's there. Thanks, Simplecast. You can find the show in all the show notes. So everything that we talked about today is going to be in the show notes at tangential.xyz. A huge thanks to Louis Zong for letting us use his song Blackberry Jam off of the album Jam 2. You can find all of Louis' amazing music at louiszong.bandcamp.com. And I think that's it. I think we did it.
Yay.
Thanks for coming on, LA.
Yay.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. This was awesome because, like, this was just a normal conversation that I would have with you anyway. But now it's you know, going to be immortalized.
The final stage of capitalism is trying to figure out how to make
yourself
yeah.
into content.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. That's literally what I've done with my life. That is how I pay my rent. Yeah.
So we're truly there. If you work for a company that sells mattresses or razors or wine or whatever, please hit us up. We have an ad break that is just has your name right on it.
If you work for a company that sells food and you want to give me
naturebox.com.
Naturebox, Blue Apron, Graze, anybody, please email us. We're hungry. Yeah, thanks for coming on, Ellie. And we'll talk to y'all next week. Bye.
Bye.